Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Greg Fels with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I've got Will J. Jackson, the actor and director of a film called Denied. Will is a U.S. Navy veteran, a police sergeant, and get my favorite part, he's first started on Burn Notice, my favorite show on TV. I've seen every episode. And he has acted in many things. He's been a policeman, a zombie, and I've actually sweated next to him at a fitness class. We'll talk about that later. Will, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Will, the name of the movie we're going to be talking about tonight is called The Denied. It's a story about a man who gets the worst news in the world. His partner has been killed. He goes to the hospital, and he's denied access. It's really a very touching story. Could you fill us in a little bit about it?
Well, it's a story I thought up in my head based on real life things I've gone through as being a police officer and watching and events that have happened. So I wanted to do this film because it affected me. I'm a cop for like 17, going on 18 years, a Navy vet, like you stated, and I used to work corrections for 2 years. And those types of jobs usually are all heterosexual jobs. So seeing this in the workforce and out in public and dealing with people, I decided to do a film. And I sat down with a writer, told her what I wanted, and we went back and forth together, and we finally got something we can actually work with. And then I had to do the casting. And I cast Mike Verdugo as my love interest, which is kind of shocking because when I asked him, I didn't know his history. So I was like, okay, that's kind of serendipitous. And then I cast the rest of the crew, and now it's out and ready to go to the festivals.
Let's talk a little bit about the coincidence of casting Mikey Verdugo. The film is based on a true story. Is that correct?
It's based, no. Actually, no. The story was something I thought of in my head, based on what I've seen in life events happening, either for YouTube documentaries or cases I've gone to with same-sex partners, where they're affected by certain police officers or how the court system, how the family treat them. And then things I've seen, and then that, I sat down with the writer, told her what I wanted, and she came up with the story. I told her the location, things like that. We got a story together, what we wanted to do. Then I had the cast. And, of course, everybody loves some eye candy. So I know Mikey Verdugo is a supporter of gay rights and also in helping people. And he's great looking. And so I asked him, Mikey, would you mind doing this role as my love interest? He goes, sure, of course. Then he goes, you know, this is my life. I'm like, say what? Because I never knew that. And so he told me about the story. And I was like, man, this was meant to be.
Right. Oh, yeah. His story, which was well documented, but also the fact that he was a friend of another policeman that was killed on the job that had some problems, some of the same exact problems after his. So I thought that's why it was a true story. And because I've heard this story over and over and over again in the gay community. But what's great about this movie, and I've clicked on everybody, I've given everybody the YouTube click. If not, go to youtube.com, put in Will J. Jackson, W-I-L J. Jackson, and The Denied, and you'll get a wonderful clip that will explain and show you this film. Anyway, so where was this filmed?
It was filmed in Miami and Broward County. That's where we filmed it. Most of the things were in Fort Lauderdale on my locations. It was amazing. I think we got locations at ANZA Motorsports Warehouse. We went to Miami Institute of Age Management down in Brickell, and we got the Calise in McKinty Funeral Home up in Fort Lauderdale, and then also the Exchange up here in Fort Lauderdale. So we lucked out.
You really lucked out. I've seen bits and pieces, and it looks very, very sleek and professional. How are we going to get this message out?
How do I get this message done? I'm first going to submit it to film festivals and let people see it and try to get it out that way. And hopefully we get recognized and it gets more and more publicity and more people see it. Once we've all done that, I was speaking to a couple actually police agencies and some friends of mine to see if they can use that in their training for cultural diversity. I think it's a good training tool you can use in cultural diversity. I filmed it. I didn't want to do a documentary style. I filmed it as a TV series that drama, dramatic TV series. So it can bring in your interest, you can see something exciting, and then also get a message across. So that's why I did it that way. So hopefully it will be picked up and people will look at it and see that, oh, man, this is great. It's real life. I mean, I did it so it can cross all boundaries. It's not gay film. It's not a straight film. It's a film of a tragic love story. And that's a way to get across. There's no hot and bothered sex to offend people, but there is some tender loving that I wanted people to know that we love each other. We loved each other, and I lost that love.
Right. Well, I think that what you've gone from what I've seen in the movie and what I've heard of the movie, and it has not, as I said, it's not come out to the film festivals or any distributor yet, but it seems like it's just another story and the people just happen to be gay. It's kind of like a tragic, you know, Shakespearean thing. You lost, you fight. And the gay thing doesn't seem to be the central thing. What seems to be the central thing is hate. I mean, it seems like discrimination and hate are at the key. And that's what I really think is going to be the shoehorn to get this into a wide audience. And I think that have any film festivals picked it up yet? I see this as a great film festival opening. I know this film is just finished, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. It's finally finished editing it. Actually, tonight I'm actually uploading it without a box so I can start submitting to film festivals. Right, the film is I think it's a great film, of course, because I made it, but I think it touches on a lot of areas, and it's a tragic love story. And it shows the unnecessary hate and separation in a time of grief, that everyone's grieving, of someone should get together and bond together and support each other and share the love that they have as one person who we lost. So, and I hope it's an eye-opener.
Well, let me get the listeners up to speed if they're not really familiar with what the law is. Right now in 39 states, I looked it up today to make sure I said the right word, in 39 states you can be fired just for being gay. But not only just fired, you can be denied service in a restaurant. You can be denied a lease on your apartment. You can be thrown out of your school if it's a private school, if not getting federal funds. So right now, there are some incredible discriminatory laws on the books. There are a lot of hospitals and a lot of states and a lot of counties. We're not in one, of course, in Broward. Broward has a very liberal human rights ordinance, but you go two counties away in Florida, and the joke is the farther north you go in Florida, the farther south it is. And this scenario that you described of losing a partner, having somebody sick, going into the hospital and being barred from seeing that person.
Can you imagine? Go ahead. You love this person for 15 years. You've built a life with this person, all these years, and they're sick. You can't go see them. Someone's barring you from going to see that. That's like rips your heart out. That rips your heart out. You basically go insane. You know?
Right.
And I don't understand what people can put that on someone else. And then what if the person you love for 15 years passes away and you have never had a chance to say goodbye to them?
Exactly.
It's barbaric, basically. Barbaric.
Yeah. And many, many straight people don't know the specifics of some of these discriminatory laws until they're actually shown it in a movie, sit down and talk to them, experience it. It's something that, you know, they just can't get married, but they can do everything else, you know. Now they can be in the military. But we have 39 states where this scenario can happen. But even taken to other extremes, you have no control over if somebody gets very, very ill, a relative can come in or change, you know, things in a nursing home, change orders in a nursing home. My partner and I have been together with my partner for over a decade, and we have all these papers and all these things. Even in liberal Broward County, when one of us dies, because we're all going to die, it's still illegal for me to actually give direction to dispose of his body. Disposition of bodies has to be a blood relative or a spouse.
And people don't realize how important these laws are for everyone. It's not because we want to get married and do these things. We love each other, and we want the same rights and the same decision for our partner. It's I don't understand what people are saying are so against it. I really don't.
Well, I mean, I think you know, we're slowly moving in the other direction, except that there are 1,138 federal laws and about 600 state laws, like the one I just mentioned. And most people don't even know about the disposition of bodies. That just happened to be something that I've had a personal experience with a friend whose partner could not go to the funeral home because, I mean, he went to the hospital because that's legal in Broward County, but you can be barred from going to the funeral home.
Yeah, saying goodbye.
And
there's a scene there's a funeral home scene in my film that shows you what will happen if he actually does sneak in there some kind of way.
And I don't know what it's like in the film, but that money for that funeral could have come out of their joint accounts.
Exactly. I mean, there have been cases where a couple have had a mortgage 20 years together, paying on the house. One passes away, some family member swoops in, takes the house from the other one because they didn't do all these extra paperwork that heterosexuals don't have to do. You know,
right,
and then they kicked them out of the house, locked them out of the house.
Correct. That did happen to a Florida couple on the West Coast right now. A very famous lawyer, Richard Milstein, has taken that case on for zero. But that happened to a couple on the West Coast. The partner didn't die. He went into a nursing home and became mentally incompetent. And even though they had the medical power of attorney, he did not have a financial power of attorney, and the family came in, swooped down, and took the house away while he was in the nursing home. That's really what's going on now. Yeah.
And now the
crazy
partner who's helped pay that mortgage for 20-something years is without a home, has lovers in the hospital, other stuff he has to deal with, and these people, that greedy people, I'm not saying all of them, greedy people come and take it because they see money there. I've done fraud for many 8 to 9 years, and a lot of things that family does to family it's unreal. We need these laws to protect us from stuff like this.
Right, and as I said, there's over 600 laws in the state of Florida that only pertain to married spouses or blood relatives, and everyone else is basically a stranger. And that's what this movie is about. That these two people that had built a life together, in the eyes of the law in the state of Florida, they were strangers. And as I said, in 39 states, which is more than half the states in the United States. And you know, we say, we have gay marriage in 13 states, but, you know, we've got 50 states in this country. And, you know, you can't, you know, you travel. I mean, you drive around. You know, we were on a car trip the other day, and, you know, we were going across a couple of states. We didn't have any rights, you know, the minute we crossed out of Broward County into northern Florida until we got, you know, you can go through Georgia, the South, everywhere, and you have absolutely no rights if you have a car accident, if somebody goes to jail as far as bail. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. And one of the things that I found in speaking to straight people is a lot of them don't know that exists. And that's why it's important to one of the mediums, of course, is the news, which a lot of people don't watch, but everyone watches movies. So it's great that you made this movie.
I thought it would touch a whole group of people.
Right. And so you were the director of this movie. Is that correct?
Yes. And thank God I had an amazing assistant director, Miguel Miller, who basically held my hand for the entire thing.
Uh-huh. Well, how was it directing a movie that was your brainchild? Did you have trouble stepping back, or was it easy?
I had a great teams together, and I trusted them a lot. And I directed by basically letting them do their job. I saw what I did, and I made sure the things I wanted in my film were there.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, Miguel Miller, Stephen Brevik, it was just, they were really, really confident people that what about that? And I'm like, I had the final no and the final yes, and I did it a few times. But most of the time, I would sit back and pay attention and then do my acting role. So it was difficult, but because when you're an actor, you hate going in and out of character to do something else because it's very tiring, and it's, you know, you feel like you're not giving it your all. But I think, like I said, my crew was amazing.
Yeah, because you have to step, and when you saw like pieces of it, you know, and you said, oh my God, did I do that? I could see where breaking character would be tough, because that's work, especially when you're to be from smiling to acting. So what other work have you done that you want to talk about? Because I think this is fascinating, but you have another life. So what other films have you been in?
Films, well, actually right now, I'm doing a domestic violence film. Basically educate people about domestic violence. I'm actually playing the abuser.
Wow.
In this film, so which I have tons of experience of doing cases. I also did domestic violence cases in the police department. And that's what my next project is. And I'm looking to do another one myself, basically, I could produce and direct another one myself. So I'm looking for something to do, I want to use and find a writer to do. Still auditioning for major TV series and TVs and movies and modeling.
Wow.
So I'm trying to do everything. And I have a full-time 40-hour job a week, and it's really, it's hard, but when you love something, you make time for it, right?
Exactly. Well, I've run into you a few times at Mikey Verdugo's physical fitness studio. We'll give Body Tech a shout out here. If anybody ever wants to get into U.S. Navy police force, Navy SEAL shape, do a couple of those sessions.
Yeah, I mean, I love Body Tech. I used to go to like five or six times a week. Then I got my job changed, so now I'm going back four times a week, but it's a whole workout, upper body, lower body, cardio. I love it.
Right. Yeah, I've done it twice. That one time when I did it with you, I think Channel 10 was out there filming you for something.
Yes. John Turchin was there, yes.
Right.
I hope this film does well. I did it. It was really funny. People said, what do you want to do? Do you want to make money from it? You want to do this? Like, my goal wasn't to make money from it. I consider it my PSA. A PSA announcement, basically. That's PSA. That's why I considered my film. Whether I raised money for it or not, I was going to make this film, and I was going to put the word out there because I think it needed to be told. And I didn't want to do it like the documentaries you see. I love the documentaries. Right. They're very tender and touching. Everyone does documentaries. I've seen documentaries like this. I have not seen a film like my film giving that message across. And what made it interesting, I love my character, Andrew, the cop, the gay black macho cop. You know,
right.
You don't see characters like that on TV. I really wish someone out there will hire me to play one.
Right. I was going to pose my next little question to ask you. Gay black policemen? First of all, that's a pretty small minority. But even African American gay men have a lot of trouble being out because, of course, their culture and their their society and the church, the African American churches, have been pretty nasty to the gay community. So I think this is a secondary message that it's okay to be an out, proud African American professional, and that's something I don't see it a lot.
In order for things to change, people have to step forward and do something. I told my mom, and when I told my mom, I felt like I didn't care what the world thought of me because she loved me anyway. And that's why I did it. I came out and told her. And that's my life. I don't consider – people say, are you straight acting? No, I'm not straight acting. I'm me. I am Will Jackson. I act like Will Jackson. When someone calls you straight acting, I think that's an insult.
I don't know what that means. Do you walk around with a stick up your butt? I mean, I have no idea.
What does that mean?
Yes, I mean, are you only acting it? It's like a little role for 5 minutes and then you change it? I mean, I'm not really sure what that means. I've been asked.
I myself all the time. How are you? I'm like, I'm Will Jackson. I'm me. I do me. I'm not trying to be anybody else. So, I mean, I don't know. There's all kinds of people out there. So just let them be and leave them alone and you do you and let them do them.
Right. Well, I mean, you do come across as a pretty normal – I mean, I've spoken to you. I've met you a few times. And I would – you know, you would say you are very striking, imposing, serious, intellectual person. And that's all you need to say. And that's what our hope is, that, you know, in the future, that's how we'll be described. But as I said, hats off to you for making a big inroad. And I – hope to God that someday, you know, you're going to say that won't be an issue. But I think right now, I think you've done a very positive thing. And I hope that some of the African-American film festivals and the African-American Research Library on Sistrunk does a showing of this, because that that community is really, and they're really hungry for this. And I know because I've seen
stuff.
You
know, I understand the black community. My partner is Jewish, Jewish with blue eyes and brown hair. So I don't really see as anything like that. If you notice my film, I did make an issue about, if you look at the film, when you show your film, you'll notice there's some odd things you're saying. How come, you know, that I did some type of layers of things there with race, racial issues, with actually the acting, black actors in the film, and other things that if you hear the wording, you notice that those points were also touched. In the film, but you know, some layers of it, so you can hit some things. Hopefully, subconsciously it'll affect them. And see, some people will notice it. I was waiting for someone to mention it to me, but no one's mentioned it to me yet. The ones I haven't told haven't mentioned it yet. So I'm waiting for someone to ask me that one question about it, and which then they once they do, I'll explain why I did something a certain way.
I think it's going to get wide. That's going to be another facet of this movie, and it may not be one you went out looking for, but I know from working with the Stonewall Library and Museum and African American youth that are gay, which we work with some of them at the Stonewall Library, there aren't that many faces they can identify with on film, is what I'm trying to say. And I think this is a good one for that addition. You know, you really need to see yourself, and maybe somebody wants to be a policeman, and maybe somebody's a little scared of going to being an out and open policeman, so they'll see this movie whether they're.
Well,
they're,
I can tell you now. I have friends that are gay police officers, firefighters, nurses, doctors, and every part of the field. I make sure myself stay rounded with all types of people, walks of life. And I have gay cop friends, and we all get together, and we have parties. We try to support each other because we know how difficult it is living in that type of, working in that type of environment. And you'd be surprised at how perfectionist they are, because they don't want another reason for people not to like them. So they're so good at what they do because they want to be the indispensable, as it's called. They need them, so they try to work so hard to be that way. And so just being normal. Well, you're not normal. Right. I wouldn't say you're normal. Normal is the one I would say. Just being with everybody else.
You want to be successful. Let's say that. You want to be successful. You want to excel in your field. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't tell me like everybody else. I want to be treated and looked at like everybody else.
Right. There's actually a book called The Q Quotient that talks about how gay communities, how there's people in like gay stockbrokers or gay lawyers or gay teachers, they all get together and say the exact same thing you just said, that they all try to be, you know, a light unto the nations. They want to be they want to have the best looking, they want to be the best dressed, they want to be the best, sell the most of this, they want to, you know, learn the most about their profession, they want to be the best real estate agent, the best lawyer, the best doctors. So there's actually research, I think it was the Harvard Business School published that book.
It's a coping mechanism that I won't generalize, I'll specify with myself. That I felt I had to be the perfect person, so no one can use, somebody have an excuse not to want to be my friend, hire me as an employee, work with me, and things like that. I remember in school, I'll be the first person in class. I knew all my work. I make sure my vocabulary was, you know, up to par.
Right.
And at work, I mean, I never call that thick. I mean, my bosses love me. At least they tell me they do. They always ask me to do this and do that, do this and that. Can you supervise these people? And hopefully it's because they know I'm going to get the job done. And it's like they're called overachievers, basically. To make ourselves so needed that they'll overlook our sexuality, which it shouldn't even be there in the first place. I can tell.
You hit the nail right on the head with that last statement. If you have all this bling and you're doing this perfect job, they'll overlook the fact that they've never seen you with a woman, or that you never talk about your wife or whatever. I mean, you're right. That's exactly it. It's like
I remember back when I first started working. Every time I talked about, I tried to share a little bit of my life with people I work with, but you have to, and a police officer, you kind of try to be a team, you kind of have a family. But I was always changed the gender of the person I'm with. It was a separate life. I always changed the gender. I had to change the gender if I felt that, otherwise you know.
Right.
Then I stopped doing it. And I said, why am I doing this? Well, after I told my mom, when I told my mom, I felt like this fire was extinguished inside me that was eating me up, probably causing cancer if I didn't do it. And when
exactly.
I told her, it just went away and dissipated, and I was such a happier person. When I went to work,
right.
I just talked like I did work like I was doing everything else. I talked
right.
like everybody else. If it came up, yeah,
right.
my partner is there, my this and that. I call him Ken.
Right.
Oh, Ken is at home, did this. My Ken's at working. And then they ask me, yeah, Ken's my partner. But that's how I talk. I'm not making a point. I'm not throwing your face.
Right.
But if you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly the way it should be. But you're right. I feminized my boyfriend's names. You know, I made him into girlfriends. You know, if it was Jerry, I would say Jen. You know, or if it was, you know, Bill, I would say, you know, Will, you know, Willie, or, you know, I would give him something. And so but I would always slip up. I mean, I was terrible at this. Until I eventually came out by just slipping up, and which is fine because it worked out. And, you know, a few of them said, well, I knew all along. And, you know, and that's a couple of
things. Can you imagine how much stress that's putting on us, on your body, and it's causing these illnesses, is making you not happy? It's always
sure.
have to watch your words. Everything you say, you have to watch what you say. And,
exactly.
Otherwise, people are going to not like you and not be accepting you. You're going to be ostracized. You're
right.
in the corner somewhere. Can you imagine
right.
that extra stuff you put up, we have on yourself when you do things like that? I mean, I can remember doing that. It was so difficult. Or either that, or I wouldn't talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They called me stuck
no.
up because they thought I was
right.
I was better than them. It actually wasn't that. I just didn't want to slip and say something that would out me, you know. So
oh, exactly. I mean, I had these horrible stomach problems that I thought were permanent until I came out, and then they went away. And went.
Yeah, I mean, people. It's a fact that stress causes injuries.
Oh my God, I was on the way to an ulcer or a heart attack. And you know, you do hear, you know, the stories of my listeners know that I talk about my partner's a psychiatrist, and you know, gay men are twice as likely to be smokers and drinkers and four times as likely to abuse those substances, abuse either alcohol or illegal or illicit
because
drugs.
You want to get away from the reality and the stress of what you're doing. I'm not saying that's an excuse
right.
for every one of them. There's people who just like everybody. We're like everybody else.
Right.
We do it because some people just have that gene
right.
or that one or that less willpower. But a lot of people
right.
do it because they want to get away from the real world and not have to deal with it for a period of time. Next thing you know,
right.
that's what they're
right.
crutch. They're living with that to survive.
Right, right. But four times as likely as the general population means there's something else working. And what's working on it is, of course, what you said, is that you're constantly walking around with this knot in your stomach and you're looking off your shoulder and you're thinking, what are they thinking about me? Are they talking about me? You know, this paranoia and stuff. So, yeah, it does build up. And, of course, the escape is easy when you have sex. Well,
it's great that you have great friends like my friend Julie Kendall, who helped me a lot with this film. She did help me with the casting. She helped me with the screen on,
right.
on the days of script supervisor. She stepped to the plate when I asked her to, and she was like my BFF. She just moved to New Orleans to just check out the scene about moving there to acting. She's an amazing actress. Been doing air
really?
System for like 4 or 5 years. I just
great.
Love her to death. And she's talking to
great.
Me and saying, like, you're doing great. I'm like, thank you so much. Glad to mention
yeah.
that.
No, that's great. No, good. This is all you. This is all about you. You're doing great. Listen, we have exactly 1 minute. We have exactly 90 seconds left, which I told you would be the fastest 30 minutes of your life, which always is. So what would you say at a screening if this young person came up to you and said, I have not out to my family yet. I'm a young college kid. I want to be an actor-director. What would you say to him?
I would tell him when – do hello?
Yes,
hello?
I'm here. Yes, hello.
Oh, I would say do what you want to do. When you're ready, I don't force. I want to never force someone to come out to anybody because that's doing their own in their own time because they have to deal with that decision. Don't force someone to come out. Let them do it. When they want to come out, they will come out. When they want to do a film, just do the film. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
I jump right in with 2 feet. Don't make excuses. Don't prolong it. Just jump in. And when you start something, people start coming to you. People start coming to you. I would like I said, I came out. I mean, I started my film and people came out. Just amazing actors. I mean, Aniela McGinnis, Ray Hernandez, Lorenzo Toledo, Cheryl Frazier. I mean, it's like Mike Verdugo, who's not a normal actor. He did great, you know. Craig Benaventura. It's like they just stepped out. I mean, look at these people with resumes and see they came to my film. I was so inspired
right.
that they did that, and because I just jumped in and the everything else fell into place.
Will, this was a treat. Thank you so much. Our show is about to end. Thank you so much, and be watch for the movie The Denied. Thank you, Will, and good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.